Future Hacker. Life. Path. Future.
Apoio Instituto Brasileiro de Ciências e Inovações.
Hello everyone, welcome to the first international edition of Future Hacker, a SON, SA and Lemmy Growth initiative to discussing futuristic topics with a sort of specialists from around the world. We will interview scientists, engineers, doctors, bright people who are shaping the future. I'd like to lead this interview, I'd like to introduce Maria Taigi. Hi Maria.
Hello everybody. Thank you, André. Hi everyone. We have an exciting conversation today about a very controversial subject, which is aging really inevitable? Or should it be treated as a disease that could actually be cured and extend humankind life expectancy to an imaginable lifespan? To drive the discussion, I'm honored to introduce our listeners to Cambridge researcher and the chief science officer at SANS Research Foundation, Aubrey de Grey. Aubrey, thank you so much for joining us today. You say that we could beat biological aging process and that this future could be closer than we think. Could you walk us through that?
Well, the thing about aging is that it's not nearly so much of a mystery as most people think. Aging is really just the same process in the human body or in the body of any living organism as it is in a normal machine, like a car or an aeroplane. Any machine that has moving parts damages itself as a consequence of its normal operation. And that damage accumulates over time, and eventually there is so much damage that the machine does not work so well, and eventually it does not work at all. And it's exactly the same for the human body. So, when we look at how to keep the human body functioning well, both mentally and physically, for a long time, for longer than it normally does, the best way to understand how to do it is to look at how we already do it successfully with simple man-made machines. And of course, we know how that is. We do preventative maintenance. The reason why there are cars now that are 100 years old, working just as well as when they were built, and many, many cars that are more than 50 years old, even though they were only designed to live maybe 15 years, the reason is because of thorough, periodic, preventative maintenance. So what we are doing at SANS Research Foundation, and what a lot of other people are doing now, is developing medicines that do preventative maintenance to the human body. What that means is removing, eliminating, repairing the damage that the body does to itself throughout life. Now, of course, it's much more difficult for the human body than it is for a car, and that's why we can't do it yet. But we are getting there. The damage that we need to repair has already been very well characterized. We have not discovered any new type of damage for 40 years or so, which is pretty good news. It means we probably know everything we need to know about what damage is there. And the process of developing the methods to eliminate that damage is going on in many laboratories all over the world. And some of it is already in clinical trials. So we are getting pretty close.
Our current belief is that aging is a part of nature. All living beings age and die, and there's probably a biological reason for that. By deactivating or postponing this logic, which side effects could we face? Is it something you foresee in your research?
Okay, so I need to contradict something that you said a moment ago. You said that this idea that we could keep people healthy for a lot longer by preventative maintenance is controversial. And you also called it a theory. It's neither of those things. It is an engineering approach to keeping a machine going for longer than normal. And it's not controversial anymore either. When I first proposed it 20 years ago, it was controversial. But now it is generally accepted by experts. And the reason I wanted to mention that is because the idea in the question that you just asked is also not controversial. 100 years ago, most biologists did think that aging was inevitable and that it had been created on purpose by evolution, that it existed for some kind of reason, and therefore if we deactivated it, then bad things might happen. But for at least 70 years, people have now known that that's not true. In the 1950s, people realized that there is so little aging in the natural world, in the wild, that it's just not possible for evolution to have created it. Organisms in the wild die of other things, like being eaten or freezing to death or starving to death. It's a little more complicated than that. Some organisms in the wild do die of aging. But in general, it is now completely accepted by almost every expert that aging is not something that we are programmed to do. Therefore, there is no real reason to expect that there would be any bad side effects if we stop it happening.
That's very interesting. But do you feel that we are scientifically ready to treat aging while we cannot treat diseases like cancer or Alzheimer's? Or is the gene editing path the one to also prevent those diseases to happen in the first place? What about the consequences of editing multiple genes and whole chromosomes?
Gene editing is certainly an important tool in medicine in general, and it will become more and more important as we get better at it. The questioner is quite right to emphasize that we are in the early years of gene editing, and there is plenty that we do not know how to do safely yet, but we are getting better at it all the time. Comparison in the first part of the question between aging and diseases like cancer or Alzheimer's is a very common question that people ask, but it is based on a misconception. The misconception is that there is some fundamental difference between the two. In other words, that there is something called aging itself, which is not a disease and is completely separate from disease and has no real place in medicine. That's not true. The idea of curing Alzheimer's or curing cancer is just a mistake. We will not cure these things because they are parts of aging. What we will instead do is stop them from happening by the same therapies, the same medicines that stop us from getting the aspects of ill health that we call aging itself. It's all one problem. The reason why people have not made much progress so far in curing Alzheimer's is because it's part of aging. And the same for most cancers, the same for atherosclerosis and so on.
Yes, it makes sense. So basically, it would be the path, right? Gene diversity is essential to balance the life. How will gene editing impact humanity? In other words, will it end diseases? Or as you mentioned, will it avoid people to get those diseases that are aging related? Or will it probably open another different venue of a new pattern of diseases?
Gene diversity in the population has always been an extremely important mechanism for the survival of species. Because, for example, when there is a new infection, it will only eliminate the species if all of the individuals are susceptible to it. And if there is diversity, then some individuals will be resistant and they will rebuild the population. But we should not be thinking too much about that in today's world, because today we have medicine. With or without gene diversity, we can use that medicine to eliminate new infections so that they do not destroy the population. Possibility is that gene editing will introduce new problems, but we must remember that we will only do gene editing when we understand why we are doing it. So, for example, we may be able to eliminate the risk of certain diseases like Alzheimer's or atherosclerosis by changing one gene in the human body so that it makes a better form of a particular protein, things like that. But we do not expect that, in fact, there is no real chance that gene editing would create whole new types of disease.
There's a line of thought which states that by unlocking the gene power, scientists may be able to find an immortality gene, let's say, and that could implant it. Do you believe in this theory?
There is no such line of thought. There is no biologist who thinks that.
Okay, so we can't talk about increasing human lifespan without discussing the economic and environmental impact to society and our planet. This line of thought is that we need to give humans the chance to make this decision and then have the chance to solve the consequences on the go. But what about justice? Death is already unequal, right? Access to healthcare is a challenge in which most people do not have the chance to fight the most basic diseases, which could be cured by access to basic infrastructure. How to avoid gene editing to follow this path of human selection for the few wealthy and fortunate beings?
Right, so this is a good question and a very important one, but luckily there is also a very good answer. These therapies that will help people to stay healthy for a lot longer, everybody will want them. And you're quite right that in today's world, when there is something that's expensive and everybody wants it, only the wealthy people get it. Of course, eventually it becomes less expensive and more people get it, but it takes a long time. But there is a difference in this case, because at the moment, when these therapies do not yet exist, aging is extraordinarily expensive for society. We are seeing today with COVID-19 how expensive one disease can be, even though, you know, in 6 months, about 500,000 people in the whole world have died from it. 500,000 people die every week from aging, and they generally spend a lot longer being sick and needing expensive medical care than people who die from COVID-19. If you try to calculate how expensive aging is, it's incredibly expensive, just astronomical. Which means, of course, that it will be in the economic interests of the country to ensure that people do not get that way, that people have access to these therapies, if they are old enough to need the therapies, so that the country saves money. These therapies will pay for themselves many, many times over, very, very quickly. There will be no delay. Everybody who is old enough to need them will get these therapies very quickly after they have been developed. And this will be true even in countries that do not like taxation. So, for example, I live in the United States, where, a lot of people think taxation is a bad thing. And we have private healthcare and so on. But even in the United States, it will be like that.
So it makes a lot of sense, and we can see that preventive medicine has been on the rise for a while due to the high costs that we currently face from aging diseases, right? So let's move to our last question. We couldn't end this interview without discussing the religious aspects. Spiritual traditions are inspired by the fact that humans have to cope with their mortality and seek an escape in transcendence. When talking about spirituality, the meaning of life, and what is humanity actually seeking? Is it more time to live or actually having meaningful experiences? If you believe in God, what's God's role on that?
So I think this is a much easier question than it seems, because the work that we do is not designed to increase longevity. Our work is only designed to increase health, to keep people healthy when they would normally be sick. And any longevity consequences are just a side effect of that, which means that this is definitely God's work. We are alleviating suffering. And whether it's the Bible or the Quran or the Torah or any other holy scripture, it's very clear that what God wants us to do down here is to minimize suffering. That's all that this is about. It's not about extending life. And of course, it may extend life or it may not. You know, God is omnipotent. God can perfectly well strike somebody down with a thunderbolt, however healthy they are. But that doesn't make any difference.
that actually makes a lot of sense, Aubrey. So how do you see blockchain in healthcare Is it something that you think it could speed up the process, the discovery processes, or is it something that, you think that is actually, I understand that, you know, we really need financing and probably blockchain could be a part of that. How do you see this subject?
Well, I don't think it necessarily matters where the money to support this work comes from. However, we do have a lot of support from the blockchain community and the cryptocurrency community. One of our biggest donors at Sense Research Foundation is actually Vitalik Buterin, the guy who created Ethereum. I think, you know, there is a lot of understanding, a lot of, you know, we're in the same mindset as the blockchain community. Therefore, certainly, the more that we can educate people who are interested in blockchain, the faster things will happen.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to this interview? Everything has been very, very interesting. I'm sure that our listeners will really, it's going to open a lot of doors to further discussions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
This work is all about reducing human suffering. And therefore, we can say very clearly that this is the number one problem for humanity, because aging causes more suffering than anything else, by far. That means that we need to work as hard as possible to develop these therapies as quickly as possible. At the moment, a lot of these therapies are being developed quite quickly because they have moved far enough through the research phase that they are being supported by investors in companies, but they could still go faster. And there are other therapies that are just as important, but they are not as far along in the development process, so they are not even being supported by investors yet. They are only being supported by non-profit charities or organizations like Sense Research Foundation. And those projects are going far, far too slowly, which means that lives are being lost. So we desperately need more support for this work, whether it's from governments or from individuals or from industry, it doesn't matter. Therefore, everybody who is listening to this podcast needs to think about what they could do to help. If you are a biologist, you need to work on the right problems. If you are wealthy, you need to support this work financially. If you are a journalist, you should interview me, for example. If you are a politician or you have influence in politics, you should try to change public policy. Everybody can do something.
Thank you very much, Aubrey.
Bye-bye then.
Future Hacker. Life. Path. Future.
Apoio Instituto Brasileiro de Ciências e Inovações.